From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thanks very much for listening today. We're heading to Vernon County to talk to a couple of people involved with the Coon Creek Community Watershed Council. First of all, we have Sydney Waddell. She is the watershed coordinator with the Coon Creek Community Watershed Council. Sydney, welcome to Newsmakers.
Thank you, Ezra.
We have with us as well Tim Hunt, who is a board member of the Coon Creek Community Watershed Council, a pretty new board member, but no stranger to the issue because he's been covering it as a journalist for many, many years. He's currently the managing editor and publisher of the Vernon Reporter, which is an online nonprofit news outfit out of Vernon County. Tim, welcome to Newsmakers. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ezra.
So we're talking about watersheds. We've talked about watersheds, particularly Coon Creek, before here on Newsmakers. But I know this is not common territory for all of our listeners. So, Sydney, why don't I start by asking you to just, in really broad strokes, define for people what constitutes a watershed.
I would love to do that. Thank you. A watershed is an area in which all water drains to a common point. So for example, if you're in Stoddard, everything upstream of you is flowing from the Coon Creek watershed. And La Crosse and Coon Valley are in the same Mississippi basin. So we're all in this together, but we're really organizing, our group is organizing on the scale of the Coon Creek watershed, which is a little bit of a smaller area.
So what geographically, like what area are you talking about when we talk about the Coon Creek watershed?
We are talking about it flows into the Mississippi River. And then if you trace that back up through Stoddard, through Chaseburg, through Coon Valley, all the way up to Westby, Highway 14 skirts it for a little bit, Highway 27 for a second. That's primarily the neighborhood we're thinking about.
Okay. All right. Now, Tim, you've been covering these issues as a journalist for a while. People might have heard other watersheds mentioned. How many of them are there? Maybe, I don't know if you know, throughout the state, but maybe in sort of southwestern Wisconsin-ish.
Yeah. So if you're talking about the watershed groups, there are 40 some across the state right now. I think it's a program that started, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, but the idea was that these are farmer-led watershed groups. This was a state program, and the idea was that farmers could get together in a watershed, and it has to have like at least 50% of the farmers in a watershed to get started. You get some seed money from the state for 3 years, and they've been doing really fantastic work, and the popularity of them has grown. The idea was to start talking to each other and doing practices on the ground geared toward conservation and figuring out what works. You know, farmers talk to each other, and they're a skeptical bunch by nature. And so it's like, you know, if they can talk to each other and figure out some things that are working on the ground, that's really helpful. You know, so the Coon Creek group is rather somewhat new. They're one of the younger ones in Vernon County. We happen to have four of them. They've on different ages. The Coon Creek group came along a little later after the 2018 floods, but they're just doing phenomenal work, and they're going gangbusters. And so this is the kind of work that, you know, the ground up thing that is really crucial out here. And we've got a really changing environment really quickly. And so people are wondering, you know, what can we do to deal with these conditions out here? So these farmer-led groups are just fantastic. And for the Coon Creek group, it's really become a social group too. There's a lot of socializing. You have a meal with your meetings, and people sit around and talk, and that's really become almost as important as the actual work that's being done.
My experience is that in nonprofit organizations, meetings are a whole lot more popular when there's food involved.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So they've made that a focus, and that's actually part of their planning, is to make sure that that socialization piece of it is there.
I want to find out more about your organization and how it's set up so that people understand that context. Sydney, tell me about what the Coon Creek Community Watershed Council is and what kind of work you do.
Well, like Tim said, we are a farmer-led, producer-led council, but we take community very seriously. And this is something that we learned going back to the 1930s when we were the site of the first nationwide soil conservation project. And, it took farmers making changes on the land to address some of these flooding and erosion concerns, but farmers couldn't do this work alone. And it really took everyone in the community supporting each other to make these changes happen. So that's something that we've held very dear and tried to infuse into our work today. So we're farmers, but we're also educators and writers and entrepreneurs and people who live in the watershed and people who appreciate the watershed and are interested in it. And we have a lot of partners in at UW-Madison and Extension and the DNR. So we're really thankful for all the support we get from different places.
When you look at the issues facing the watershed, there are all kinds of concerns, but some of it has to do with things that the public might notice more, in terms of flooding affecting their ability to access the water, or the quality of the water, fishing, sporting activities of different kinds. And then there's the whole other side of it, which is farmers that live in that area and how being part of this watershed, the responsibility that they bear, and how it affects their ability to make a living. Tim, what are the concerns facing the watershed at this point in history?
I come at this from several different points of view, which I think is helpful because I actually grew up in the watershed. I grew up at the very tippy top of the Coon Creek watershed, 160-acre dairy farm, 40, 50 cows. So I had that perspective. And then and it wasn't until about 2008 that I went to the 75th anniversary of the Coon Creek watershed. And they had some people from the National Office of the NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service, which is the federal agency that grew out of the Coon Creek watershed, which I didn't realize. Even growing up here, I didn't realize that history. And so they had some people from the National Office come out, and it really hit me how important that legacy of conservation was and how that grew. This was literally the first project in the country, and helped turn around the Dust Bowl. So it's amazing history, and it's the foundation, I think. And so the Coon Creek Group is really kind of building on that tradition and that legacy of conservation. So I worked for a bit in Congressman Kind's office, and as I worked as a journalist and then for Congressman Kind, I had gone to all these watershed meetings, the flood recovery meetings that took place, especially in the Kickapoo River Valley after the 2018 floods. And I came out of those meetings thinking a couple of things. I knew that people either had to move out of the way of the flooding because, after 15 years of, 100 or 500 year floods every 2 years, people started to go, okay, what do we got to do here, right? I mean, we can't just let this keep happening. So it hit me that, you either have to help people move out of the way, or you have to, help manage the flood somehow to not make it so damaging. So how do you do that? And I wasn't sure for a while, which one of those things we would have to do. And now it's becoming pretty apparent that we have to do both. It's not just one thing. And so up and down the Kickapoo Valley right now, you'll see four communities have they came together, they got a grant, they did flood mitigation planning, and then they went out to get federal money to try and implement those flood mitigation plans. And that work's happening right now. The community of Viola, for instance, has built they moved their gas station, which in a small town means you moved your grocery store, and they new retail spaces, new commercial areas, new residential areas, apartment buildings. So that's happening right now, and there's four communities that are there. Different stages of that work. So the other piece of it, besides moving, is the work that the Coon Creek Group is doing and other watershed groups that, okay, what are the things we can do in the landscape to help, not have these flood events that we all know are going to continue to happen? What can we do to make them less damaging or less severe? The slogan they've come up with is making running water walk. What are the practices that we can do to slow that water down? We know we can't We can't change the weather event, but what can we do to manage it? So it's looking at agricultural practices, looking at, you know, even in residential areas, what can we do? Road construction. You know, there are a number of areas that we can look at to say what are the things that can help us manage this better. It's just a new normal, so we have to deal with this.
The Coon Creek watershed is old. I think it just celebrated its 90th year of existence, if memory serves, like last summer or something like that. But I'm wondering about like the pieces of infrastructure that are part of the watershed. There are some dams. There are some other things. Sydney, what exists still that people might not be aware of that exists either to help control how the water flows through the watershed or some of this infrastructure that's now being questioned and in some cases decommissioned?
The first thing I actually thought about when you talked about that, when you brought up old flood management strategies in the watershed, where some of these practices actually from the 1930s, like the terraces and the contour strips, that maybe we don't think about those as infrastructure on the same terms as we do large earthen dams, but these exist on people's fields. And as, you know, farming practices change and we implement different types of machinery, and people are farming and they don't realize what these practices and these structures are, these are becoming lost in the knowledge and the way of working with instead of against water, that those kind of represent that's being lost as well. So that's one critical piece of these practices and ways of adjusting to flooding that Tim was talking about. That's one thing I think of. And then, of course, the second are these earthen dams throughout the Kickapoo and Coon Creek watersheds, and then also other watersheds across the state and across the nation. And so these dams, we're thinking around, 25 to the largest one in the Kickapoo River watershed was 60 feet tall. That was Jersey Valley Dam, excuse me. And these dams are, you know, they're all at and approaching the end, beyond or approaching the end of their lifespan, their 50-year design lifetimes. And they were built, you know, in the 1950s and the 1960s by the NRCS to control flooding. And so they're primarily dry dams, which means they don't have, a pool of water behind them, except for Jersey Valley Dam, which, you know, as listeners may know, was also a recreational lake. And so these dams are situated in the upper portions of the watershed. So it's kind of crude, but if you take your hand and you look at your hand and picture Coon Valley maybe in your palm, and then on your fingers, if you spread your fingers and maybe like your top knuckle of each finger, if you can imagine a dam sitting there, and if water is flowing down your hand, it's going to hit all of your fingers and the dams there are going to stop that water. So in Coon Creek, that looked like 19% of the watershed above Coon Valley was being regulated by a dam. And then the rest of that was, water was experienced or being intercepted by other types of practices. But so 19% of the watershed though was protected by these flood control dams. And in 2018, when the, you know, these record setting floods came through the region, three dams in the Coon Creek watershed failed. And Tim can speak better to that.
Yeah. So what happened was, that was just a monumental flood, broke records, some places by, 3 to 5 feet. That we had three dams in the Coon Creek watershed, a couple other dams in the West Fork of the Kickapoo fail. And what that means is, you know, the water didn't just go through the auxiliary spillway. It also went over the dam itself. And if all the engineers I've heard talk about it said, statistically speaking, that's just off the charts. And that made people in the national office of the NRCS, who monitors and, you know, controls these dams, that it made them take notice. And they came out here and they wanted to know, okay, what's going on? Well, how did this happen? This shouldn't happen to five dams in one place. And so they invested about $1.8 million in those two watersheds, the West Fork of the Kickapoo and the Coon Creek. And they did an investigation. They said, what, we got to figure out what's happening and what we need to do. And unfortunately, what they discovered was that the cost of the dams over their lifespan of 50 years was kind of a wash. You know, they said that at least in Accoon Creek, it was, you know, it what they protected, it cost almost as much to build and keep those dams in place as what they were protecting. And moving forward, if we try to rebuild those at this at a higher standard, because the you know design technology has improved and we have more severe weather events, if we try to rebuild at this higher standard, it's going to be just not cost effective. It's going to be so expensive. So what they've decided is that these dams need to be taken out, and that means they're going to notch them all so that they can have. They can handle a 100-year flood event, and the water can flow through them without a problem. So that's another level of what we have to deal with in these watersheds. That, and keep in mind, there's 12,000 of these dams across the country. There's 22 of them in Vernon County, and it's not just Vernon County because the Coon Creek flows through La Crosse, Monroe, and Vernon County. So three counties will have to sign on to this plan to decommission these dams. So that is another level that we're dealing with, and another reason, you know, like work like the Kickapoo or the Coon Creek Group is doing is just that much more important.
Sydney, you were about to say something in addition to what Tim was commenting on.
Oh no, I just wanted to echo Tim and say that it is so important that you do comment on the decommissioning, whether you live in the watershed, if you like to visit the watershed, or if you live in a watershed where similar dams have been built. And just because this hasn't happened in your watershed yet, it doesn't mean that it won't or that it can't. And so I'm not trying to scare any listeners, but if there is anyone listening in the Bad Axe watershed or Mill Creek, which is up toward Alma, or Bogus Creek, which is a little bit north of that, maybe that's getting beyond your broadcasting range, but Plum Creek, close to Hillsboro, you have these dams in your watershed too, and we all share a very similar sandstone geology, which is part of the reason why these dams failed. It is important to be engaged with this process. It's the first time that this has happened in the nation, as far as we know. But and what happens here is going to set a precedent for how these decisions are made in the future. So we do need to get this right and do due diligence as we move through this process.
That's Sydney Waddell. She's the watershed coordinator for the Coon Creek Community Watershed Council. Tim Hunt is with us as well. He's a board member for the council and the managing editor of the Vernon Reporter. We're talking to them on Newsmakers. You've been hearing about that public comment period. We'll let you know how you can participate in that as our program continues. In the meantime, if you've missed part of our conversation or would like to hear a previous episode of Newsmakers, you can find them all on our website. We've got a brand new website, WPR.org, has been redesigned. All you got to do is go there, click on the Shows tab, and you'll be able to find Newsmakers right there and listen to all those previous episodes that you might have missed. In the meantime, our program continues after this here on Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall here in La Crosse. Today we're talking to Sydney Waddell and Tim Hunt from the Coon Creek Community Watershed Council. And Sydney and Tim referenced a public comment period that is open now in reference to some proposals that would decommission the existing earthen dam structure that is part of the Coon Creek watershed. So let's I don't know who would be the most appropriate to answer this question. Sydney, I'll throw it to you just because you were most recently talking about the public comment period. If people are interested in offering their comments, where do they do that? How do they find the portal through which that goes?
So the public comments are all on a website, and if it would be helpful, I can read the link to you on air. If you look up, well, if you just Google West Fork, Kickapoo, and Coon Creek watersheds plan EIS, it should come up as one of the first search results. The actual website is wfkandccwatersheds.com-2023. And then it'll bring you to this page that I have up right now where you can access the entire draft plan environmental impact statement. And again, like Tim mentioned, this covers both the West Fork Kickapoo and the Coon Creek watershed. So you can read the West Fork Kickapoo and you can read the Coon Creek watersheds. And then you can submit your comments directly online. It will ask you for your name, your affiliation, your email, your address. If your comment applies to, or the general genre, your topic applies to whether you're concerned about the fisheries or engineering or water quality, things like that. And then you can leave your comment and submit it. And all of the comments will become part of the public record that goes into informing the rest of this process. And then over the next few months, before May, NRCS is going to take some time to respond to these comments. And that will all be reflected in the next draft of the environmental impact statement.
And I would say
Okay.
too, if people are wondering where to go, they can always, go to our website and email us. We can direct them as well. Our website is CoonCreekWatershed.org. So people can go there and send a message. We'll get them connected to make a comment.
Okay. Sydney referenced this, the environmental impact study and some of the other data that's been compiled by the NRCS. Tim, is there a broad strokes? I mean, those documents are long. Is there a broad strokes way to understand some of what is contained there?
So we just had two public meetings, one in Coon Valley and one in Cashton, one for each watershed. Obviously a lot of that information overlaps, but the long and short of it, I guess, is just their analysis of why they went through a number of possible alternatives. They looked at, can we move these dams to other locations? Can we repair them? Can we do land management practice? Because can we do small dams? They tried to study all the possible alternatives and then the economic impact of those. So they had a number of large contract organizations from across the country. They had about 40 people in total, I think, working on this, economists and hydrologists. And their conclusion was, after looking at all of that, that economically we can't get around the fact that the dams are they're a liability at this point because they know that they're probably going to fail, or there's a good chance of that. And so economically they have to kind of start there. We have to take them out, and that's not a minor cost. I mean, we're talking millions of dollars. Now, if there's a silver lining in here, it's that they've agreed to pay the 100% cost of taking them out. So that at least is not on the local governments, because the original agreement was the federal government will build these and the local government will take care of them for 50 years. So the good news is the local government doesn't have to pay for that. They've also agreed to pay for part of the cost, or most of the cost, of bringing Jersey Valley back, and that's mostly because of the recreational value. So there is a recreational pool associated with that. Now the local government has to agree to pay their share of that, but that's another possible silver lining here. So there will be one dam probably coming back. So I guess the summary of the reports and what people can comment on is just what they see as far as moving forward, what they see as what it leaves you with a feeling in the end, kind of like, okay, we're going to have less protection now. So if people have feelings on how we can manage moving forward, or what they would ask of the federal government to do, to be able to deal with these new environmental conditions. That would be the best thing.
So if people are listening to this and they're interested and they want to learn more about your organization, what the Watershed Council does and how they can become involved in that work, what do they do, Sydney?
Anyone is welcome to attend our general council meetings. Our next meeting will be February 7th at 6 o'clock p.m. Dinner beginning at 6 p.m. Anyone is welcome to join for dinner. That is free. And then the actual meeting will begin at 6:30. This will be held at the Coon Valley Conservation Club, right off 162 in Coon Valley. And yeah, you do not have to be a member to attend the meetings. But if you are interested in membership, membership is free. Also, you can become a member in person at our meetings or by going to our website. You can look us up. We're the Coon Creek Community Watershed Council. And again, signing up for membership there and joining your email list to stay up to date about watershed events, as well as the decommissioning process as it unfolds over the course of the next year. And membership will also connect you to other opportunities to, we offer support for cost share and conservation practices. So if you're interested in cover cropping or planting trees or hedgerows, things like that, of that nature, we can support you in that way. And then also just finding a community that is invested in responding and taking action. And like Tim was saying, it's a really beautiful place to be, and just really supportive people who are all really passionate about responding to these issues and being there for each other and supporting each other.
It truly is a community organization, like Sydney said. You know that, the name has community in it for a reason. That was put in there intentionally, and it, you'll also notice that the initials include CCC. And that's paying homage to the original, watershed project in the Coon Valley that had the Civilian Conservation Corps that did a lot of this original conservation work on the land. So, in fact, we've got an event coming up on May 4th that's going to be on one of the original CCC sites of one of the original CCC camps. So, there is that legacy, and we're trying to build on that history. You know, the important thing out of that, I think, is that we have an example from the 30s, right? We can look back and say, and to me, it's really striking how similar a situation we're in, because that was a mostly man-made ecological disaster, the precursor to the Dust Bowl and farming practices that weren't suitable to this landscape. And we kind of created that situation, but yet we came out and figured out ways of making that better and actually reversing it. And so it feels very similar, like we're sitting here in this time when it feels like, well, how can we possibly stop floods, right? I mean, it feels daunting, but we have a history in that watershed of coming together and figuring out maybe there are some things we can do. So that's really what this organization, and it came from a farmer-led watershed group, but it's not just farmers. There's a lot of people in this group that aren't necessarily, your traditional farmer, like you might say, but they're getting involved and trying to figure out ways to help.
Tim Hunt is a board member for the Coon Creek Community Watershed Council and the publisher and managing editor of the Vernon Reporter, which you can find online. Sydney Widell is the watershed coordinator for the Coon Creek Community Watershed Council. Thank you both for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ezra.
Thanks, Ezra.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Later on our conversation, we've got a very interesting event coming up that is a jazz poem by the wonderful African-American poet Langston Hughes is going to be interpreted at Luther College by a wonderful group of jazz musicians, and I'll have a conversation with one of them coming up next here on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to get in touch with our show this week or any other week, I'd love to hear from you. You can email newsmakers@WPR.org. That's newsmakers@WPR.org. Our program continues in a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio.